we started talking about the Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam. So I think perhaps, since we only have limited time, the most efficient way to give you a sense, a little bit, of the range of understandings of the Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam, and to do so maybe within the context of a very practical discussion of it, so we'll accomplish the Shnehem. So we've quoted in the past week from a sefer called Elish Shekol from the Hotzi, written by a Dayan by the name of Rav Goldberg. So there are those who might be surprised that he's got a whole volume on that topic of Kriya Beget, but you'd be even more surprised to know that he's got a whole separate volume on issues of what makes a get Musa. You might think that at least both those topics could be covered in one volume, but no, that there's one volume on Kriya and one volume on Get Musa. So here in this volume, entitled Get Musa, in case of any lack of clarity. So he discusses a lot of things relevant to this, and he has an appendix here at the back about Harchakos Rabbeinu Tam in a practical sense. So we can't go through everything, but maybe we'll try to use this a little bit to consider some of the issues where he's talking specifically about laws that have been promulgated in Eretz Yisrael here in 1995, I believe, and the question of whether these laws are consistent with what's allowed by Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam. So essentially, what we saw yesterday, just to very quickly recap, we saw that sometimes kfiyah is called for, and then basically a lot we can do. But often kriya is not called for, or modus alai, which may cover a lot of cases, is the subject of a major machlokis, with a lot of Rishonim saying it's not called for. And therefore, assuming that we have to remain below the threshold of kriya, so what does that mean, or what does it not mean? So we saw that, so for example, chayrim is considered to be too much, to put somebody in chayrim with all of its implications about klala for death and the like, that is above the threshold. We discussed also how do we figure out what the threshold is about. We had a couple of possible suggestions. Maybe anything that's too distracting from everything else is considered kfiyah, meaning anything that you can't think of anything else until you get rid of it is called kfiyah. Maybe it's a difference between positive and negative. Maybe it's a difference between things that are otherwise illegal and aren't. Maybe it's a question between direct correlation between the get and other things. Those were all possibilities. So we saw that some of the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch talks about calling him a variant, about being kofir b'milim. Those were apparently below the threshold. And then we saw that many Rishonim, as quoted by the Ramah, that for a very significant citation, the Ramah says on the one hand, the Rabbeinu Tam is machmir not to do kfiya unless it's very clear that kfiya is called for. But at the same time, he is the namesake of the Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam. Not because he made a big donation, but because he is associated halakhically with them. Maybe he made a big donation too, who knows. But the idea of Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam represents certain distancings which apparently do not rise to the threshold of kfiya and yet may help. So in that light, this Rav Goldberg over here discusses, so what does the law call for? And so he wants to analyze whether or not this law would meet the standard of Harchakos Rabbeinu Tam. Would it exceed the standard? That's really more what we're concerned about. Would it be more than that? So apparently there were various rights that the law seeks to restrict, such as, he has a whole list here, Lakseis Min Haaretz, to leave the land of Israel, Lakabal Darchon Yisraeli, Otudas Mavar, Lefichok HaDarkonim Letashiv, get a passport, Lakabal Lahachzik Lachadesh Rishayin Higa, to get a driver's license or to renew one, Lusmanos Libacher, Lashamesh Mishra, Pi Din, Al Misha Beguf Mubukark, Mashmo Bechok Mubakar Medina, Lasot Mitsoa, Sheisuk Bal Mustar Al Pi Din, Lahafel Esa Katon Risho, Yerhedra Al Pi Din, getting involved in businesses that need licenses, to open a bank account, various things like this are all included in the law. Now, just to give you a little bit of a hint of what's to come, so based on what we've seen yesterday, so the first item on the list to prevent you from leaving the land of Israel. On the one hand, we could see why that's particularly relevant, right? Clearly, if we're worried about someone abandoning his wife, so that's going to be the first thing we're going to worry about. We're not going to want him to leave our jurisdiction. On the other hand, can you sense why that one might be particularly challenging?
Marty? I mentioned the Gra yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He said that it might be according to the Gra. Just you'd only be able to be the Anchakos if he had a method of getting out of them. If he had a place
elsewhere. So we're going to see that that might be particularly significant. That if we're both putting on Harchakos and limiting his ability to escape, so to speak, maybe that's a combination that's going to get us in trouble. So that's an important point. So let's see how this plays out. So in discussing this, so he notes, okay, so he quotes first from the Ramah that we saw yesterday, that there is this concept of these Harchakos. So commenting on that, he says, he brings here basically four versions, which is what's very significant for us, more five versions. It says, Makor divri harama, him bedivri ben otam, hamufim bedivri vasena rishonim, begirso shonim. And the Ramah's psak is based on Rebbein Otam that appears in the Rishonim in many different ways. Girso rishonim, he shonim Mordechai Tzubis. That you saw, the Mordechai Tzubis. Arama koin yom rishonim Rebbein Otam, deducho la'asosh nekabul aleinu gzeiro shol visa v'liten imo at shekab v'liten get, avolindos lo, that we can make a policy that we're not going to do any business with him until he agrees to give a get, but to excommunicate him, we cannot do. So when somebody did excommunicate someone in a situation which did not rise to the level of kfiya, so Rebbein Otam said that get was no good, he didn't give another get. Fine, so that doesn't tell us so much. Just that there is this idea, basically, and this text is brought also in the Haggadah Sashri, Parakamadir, and it's also brought in the Beis Yosef, maybe you saw that. And Ayin Shabba Mordechai, Shekasev Din Zeh Lagabe Kola Mikrim Shamrim Chazal Shchayv Lotzi, Elo Shamrim Hen Shekofin, Kegav Nadil HaChakir Beyatam. That's the policy. All of the cases where we say he's obligated to be motzi, but we don't say kfiya, so harchakas Rebbein Otam. A different version is in Sefer HaYasha for Rebbein Otam, Chof Dalet, where Rebbein Otam there responded, Af Moriedes HaToenes Mois Alai, B'chol Zeh Osinus HaChakos, right? That so far is a chiddush, right? That even a Moriedes who says Mois Alai is subject to the harchakos. Because in the Mordechai, we didn't see that, right? In the Mordechai, we saw that somebody who we paskin chayiv legarish, but not kfir, we should do the hachad. Here, this is a different version, saying that even including Moz Alai. Now that itself already is calling attention to an important question. Is there a situation where hachakos Rebbein Otam might be illegitimate? Do we have to have a certain threshold for that? Right, do we say it's either kfiya or everything below kfiya, or do we have to have significant basis in order to justify harchakos Rebbein Otam? So we know that Rebbein Otam was wary about mois alai as a basis for kfiya, but here to at least allow the harchakos, so that's important, which we don't know from how he's quoted in the Mordechai. So, but here's how he says it. Get to the main point. Ach im kor b'seinu shavim b'davar. If everyone agrees, all the rabbis agree. Tigzru eila chamur al kol yish v'yisha mizera beis Yisrael hamil v'malechem shloy rishoy and the davarimo. So we should make exera on every man and woman, and everyone who is associated with you, that they should not be permitted to speak to him. Lisa Valitain Imo to do business with him, Laharicho to host him, Haricho with a ches means to host him, Lahachilo, Lahashkoso to feed him and to give him what to drink, Lovoso, Lavakro Bachaloso to accompany him and to visit him when he's sick. Bo Yosifu Chomer Bersoso Bersona Makaladam Imbo Yagarish Yatir Oso Isha Sayald Hazos. And to add also extra severity to this, in their desire that everyone should make clear that if he does not release this young woman, that's the message you want to convey. Shebazeh ein tfiyah alav. That is not tfiyah. Shem yirtza mekayim. That's the emphasis, and that seems to be the key point here. V'hu lo yolakeh b'gufo mitok nidui zeh, ach anu misparad me'olam. So we're going to separate from him, but he's not getting hit, and if he wants, he'll do the right thing. So the emphasis in this girsa, right, so in addition to being mechadish, the application to Moshe Salai, but there's an explanation here. Mordechai didn't explain why it's not called kriya. Here in this version, so there is a shikon explanation, that basically it's still up to him to decide whether he wants to do it or not. The Maharik is the one who adds the phrase which Morty was just referring to, that the Gra quotes. The Gersha Shlishis is Gersha Samarik. But Maharik Shorish Kuflam and Hey adds an important point. Shabazah Ein Shfiya Olav Shem Yirtza Yimsolo Mako. That if he wants, he will find a place.
I think that we have two different reasons. That one is like the ground, but also you're saying like, able to get out of it by doing the right thing.
Well, he's always able to get out of what's happening by doing the right thing. So you have to kind of emphasize that. I mean, that's what it sounded like from the Shefer Yasha version. I think you have to say the point is that he also could not. He could still survive by not doing that. So, unless you want to say that it's simply not significant. Right, that's not part of the definition of why it's not kriya, except for the sentence, it sounds like it is. You know, if we were saying that in a different sentence, maybe it might mean a lot more. V'hulo yalaka b'guf m'tof m'duyav z'ach anin esparad me'ilo. Right, so it's almost the exact same language. It's clearly the Shigirsa issue, because basically he traded that word mekayim for these three words. Yin solamako. Even though the Ben Tam's view was that whoever forces a divorce based on Moshe Salai is increasing Mamzerus, Kamosha Kosova Osa Tshuva Atzma, like he says in that same Tshuva, Afilu Hafi Matir P'kiagavne Delo Chashiva Le'kfiya. Because in that case, it's not considered to be Kfiya. That's also what the Smak says, etc. There is a fourth version. The fourth version is in the Sefer Binyamin Zev, where he says to skip to the middle. Says the cost of Shekol HaKoreichos Yasolo Shelo Yimolu Beno Below Yamdu Lo Sefer Below Yikruhu. They shouldn't circumcise his children, and they shouldn't teach them, and they shouldn't bury him. Unless he divorces with a kosher get based on these chachamim of the city. According to Ben Tam, that's not called kfiya. Shim kideish adam echem Yisrael bas Yisrael kidas Moshe Yisrael v'sof eni shirotzebo. Because if a person, a Jewish person, should marry a Jewish girl kidas Moshe Yisrael, and then she doesn't want him, so minhadin, we should not be kofa for him, whether through Jews or through non-Jews. Let's say if he gets imprisoned, and we say we're not going to help you, good or bad, unless you do the right thing, and because he's afraid of what's going to happen to him in jail, so he agrees, and he writes again for that reason, it would seem like that is kosher. So you see what he says there? He says that if we were going to lock him up in a jail, or especially if we were going to have the non-Jewish authorities lock him up in a jail, so then we'd really have to worry that would constitute kfiya. But let's say he did something else wrong, and he ends up, or maybe he didn't do anything else wrong, but he justly or unjustly gets put in a prison by the secular authorities. And we decide, he comes asking for our help, his lawyer comes asking for help, and we say, we're not going to help unless you divorce your wife. So that, he says, is not real. So how do you understand that version of it? That's really the ikkar. Each citation here, you see, puts a different spin on why these harchakos are acceptable. So how did you understand, what's the spin that comes out from the Binyamin Zev over here? Anyone want to comment on this? Why is this not clear?
Because we're looking at the condition of him giving a get as doing him a favor of trouble that he's already in. So he can choose to accept that favor, or he can choose to remain in jail. But if we're putting him in prison in the first place, then we're not doing him a favor by getting him out. We've caused the problem in the first place. So you should worry that that's not.
Right, they said we can't cause the problem. And remember, we talked about Bakzela, Baitstaka, and things like that, so we drew on these definitions that, you know, we have a protection racket. The mob has a protection racket. So, you know, the part of it that's a racket, is the part of it that's extortion, is if you're going to cause the threat and say, I'll take away the threat if you do what I want, so that's called extortion. Somebody already has a problem, and you provide a service that gets rid of problems, so then that's not called coercion, that's legitimate business. So here you're saying if somebody already has a problem and you could help them, so you have a right to say, I'm only going to help them if you go along with what we want you to do, and that's not called fear. But that emphasis, that application is not so much in the previous citations of Rabbeinu Tam. What he's basically saying is it seems like it's a positive-negative distinction, that we can't hurt you, but we can refuse to help you. We can refuse to do things for you, which was one of our possibilities yesterday. In the earlier versions, it wasn't so much like that, but the Myrick's version seemed to say that it's just simply not absolute and overwhelming because there is a way out of it. That was maybe alluded to in the Sefer HaYashar version, but is clearer in the Myrick version. And here, the Binyamin Zev seems to be focusing on something completely else. That these are things that are all about not helping you, but they don't rise to the level of any negativity. And even though you're going to have a pretty miserable life, if nobody's going to do anything to acknowledge you, but still not, that's not considered to be kfir. And the fifth version is that which is the Darkei Moshe, the Ramah in his commentary to the Torah, where he says, "V'chein kasev beis Yosef, t'yachol l'mahachmer olav shol imolu lo bana v'lo yachmisu v'beis ha-sefer v'lo yakabru oso im yomus." That's not considered to be kfiya on the get to fulfill that which she is obligated to do, which doesn't really make it so clear what the basis is. First of all, we don't know from this quotation whether he'd apply it to Moshe Alai. We just know that the situation where he's mechuyev, that seems to be part of the emphasis of the Darkei Moshe. As far as why it's not called kfiya, so that it's not clear that he really explains it. And do we see in his words why it's not called kfiya, or simply his focus on that it's applied here in a situation where he's mechuyev, and it's not called kfiya. So here, the Sefer Gev Musa wants to talk about the difference between these girsos. And he wants to suggest that this Girsa, the Darkei Moshe, he thinks is a Tosafot. Because he writes, really, Girsa zu mashmar shachakash ben atam hi kfiya, ala me'achash mechuyiv legarish ein zu kfiya ala kedit. That one could read this, if we want to say, that he's explaining why it's not kfiya, so to focus on the mechuyiv, so what we were just saying, doesn't explain it. Right, because that's the whole issue here. We're assuming that kfiya is not justified. So if he can't, then that's where we're applying it in cases where kfiya is not justified. So he can't explain it by saying, well, it's not kfiya because it's justified. That's the whole issue. If it was justified, then we wouldn't worry about kfiya. So one has to say that it means trying to say something else. Barei b'ben yamin zav, which is the source for the Darkei Moshe, lo muskar klal tam zav, you don't find that reason. And it's also difficult because in the all other results of Rabbeinu Tam, it explains that the reason of Rabbeinu Tam is that this is not kfiya. Odiyesh l'tmoa arayas adake Moshe. We also have to comment on that, on his proof. because it's talking about something else. So he thinks there is a typo here. And he says, if you look at the long version of Darkei Moshe HaAruch, which is printed in the Machon Yerushalayim Torah, there you find the text of the Darkei Moshe in its full. And here's how it reads. Ki ein ze kfiya, rak she'ein osin lo tovos. Right, it's not a kfiya, just we're not doing good things for him. V'chein heshivu chachalim gedolim. Kasav agos mordechai zegitin, ma'isim b'achayach shukir shishu v'gershu v'otsi lazal get the kofar v'yat on the garish, v'vushu v'sarash, ma'chum shenizim get kashra shishu v'ksas lazal, v'achum v'osim v'tzvichim get t'acher, v'otu l'kofo, t'zvivash, mishen rosa l'kayim ono, ki agavna v'yachon dosh, t'kayim ono shigarish, de'ein ze kfiya al haget, rak l'kayim mashim v'chuyiv la'asos. So basically, he has a fuller version here, which makes 2 points. One is that it's not kfiya because it is an abstention of positive rather than doing something negative, which is essentially the point of the Binyamin Zev. And that the emphasis on Mechuyim Lasos is because, let's say, a situation where he has marital obligations he's not fulfilling, so then we'll say that we're basically trying to be kofa on that. But it's not kfiya on the get, it is a kfiya on his chiyuvim, and that's legitimate. So he wants to suggest that that's how the words get kind of melded in the Darkei Moshe. But in any event, it seems like there are a couple of points that emerge here. Still true that just reading the Darkei Moshe by itself, so the Mechuyah part does not explain the Kfiyah part. It's not there to say why it's not Kfiyah. It's not Kfiyah for its own reasons. And if you're Mechayev Ona, you want to be called for that, then that's not going to be called Kfiyah on the get itself. Okay, so far so good? Yes, sir.
Can you just repeat the Darkei Moshe one more time?
The longer version or the shorter
version?
So the shorter version, he just has this mysterious phrase of Ein ze kfiya al hagat l'kayim mashu nuchuyu vasos. So our original reading of it, we said that he's not explaining why it's not kfiya, he's just saying that it's not kfiya, and it's telling him to do what he has to do. Which what he has to do suggests that it's maybe some situation of chayiv l'garish, not a situation that the Moshe lied necessarily. In the longer version of Darkei Moshe, so there are a couple of things added, that the reason it's not kfiya is because it's just holding back good things rather than hurting him, like the Binyamin Zev had formulated it. And that the idea of Mechuyav Lasos, the reference to his other chiyuvim, and therefore that's where you have the Mechuyav Lasos idea like Ono. Okay. Alright, so let's skip around a little bit. Yes, sir.
Ostensibly, in things that, in some of the cases, she doesn't want to be married to him anymore.
Right.
So it's not kfiya because we want to get him to do the stuff he's chayav to do in the first place. But the woman doesn't care to get, let's say, mizonos, so that he's refusing her. There's other problems wrong with the marriage.
Right. So mizonos may be a basis to that. It sounds like mizonos might be a more absolute category. But it depends clearly what situations you're going to be talking about. As we've seen, every situation is subject to a little bit of a different assessment. But it's not so clear.
Let's say it's my line.
Right, so I think it's not so clear from the Darkei Moshe version that that's true. I think it is clear from the Maariv's version that that's true. I think it's also going to be subject to a little bit of debate. So what have we seen from these five versions? Just to recap, what issues have been brought up? So what Ari is asking right now, when are the harchakos justified? Are they justified? We can imagine three choices, right? We could say they're justified whenever there's a clear chiyuv l'garish. They're justified in ma'od salai situations. Or maybe you could say they're justified whenever, even if theoretically something doesn't rise to the level of ma'od salai, but she wants out, so maybe this doesn't endanger the kashrus to get at all. And that might be legitimate, although we haven't yet seen basis for that. We've seen basis for Ma'is Alai, we've seen basis for Chiyuv. In order for that question to be answered, whether there's any threshold at all, we have to know, does this at all threaten the get? Now, theoretically, one may also find middle ground. One might say this doesn't constitute Kfiyah. Let's say if we don't establish that there really is a Chiyuv Lagarish even, or a Mitzvah Lagarish, so we might say that this doesn't qualify as kfiya, it's not going to mess up the get, but it's still not right. You know, what right do you have to refuse to bury someone or refuse or basically embarrass someone, as we find in some of the cases, if it's not established. So that's also going to be a position that's going to be maintained. So we'll have to see how this plays out. It says, if you look at the Rama as he has it, and also the first Girsa, which is the Mordechai, so you'll see that they brought Rabbein Tam to Stama, and they didn't explain the reason why you can do the Sarfata. So we have to figure out what the Pshat is. And we could say, he writes here, that even according to Rabbein Tam, the Harchaka is called Kfiya. Right, this is a point we were just making. Ela shebimikra mesuyim kasha adam mechuyim legarish es ishto efshir yehi kfiya kedin. Maybe there is this new threshold where that's considered to be legitimate kfiya. Achen meida, however, alternatively, you can say that maybe Rabbeinu Tam's point is shekol pu'ula shiva sheva al tas and nechshev is lekfiya klal. That was the question we asked. Is it that this is not kfiya at all, or it's a type of kfiya which is legitimate under the right circumstances? And the nafkamina would be as if they did the harchaka without justification. But according to the first reason, it's going to be kfiya, and it's going to be a get melusa, as opposed to the second reason, where if you make a mistake, you're not risking passing the get. So this is a safek in the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, on the surface, one would think that it really sounds like it's not kfiya at all. But the Chazon Ish has a safek about it. And his language, let's read the language of the Chazon Ish, it's Efshir Da'afal Gav Dekaimalan Kevin Hanan Al Pirushalmi Dein Kofim Beshute, even in cases where we're not hitting the sticks. Mikom Makom Harchakos Eilu Osin, Vahavu Kol Harchakos Eilu Kfiya Kedid. That we still do these Harchakos, and these Harchakos are considered legitimate Kfiya. Lefize, Imhaya Ha'isu Yalpi Harchakos Eilu Shalok Kedin, Haged Pasu. Important point, right? So you could have thought that it's not a conclusion you could reach, but here the Chazon Ish says that when the harchakos are not legitimate, the get is possible. Right? You understand why you could have thought that that's not a logical conclusion, right? Because you could have said imanav shach. If it's considered kfiya, then we should not be allowed to do it, because we're talking about situations where kfiya is not justified. So you could say Mimanav Shach, if the Harchakos Rabbeinu Tam are allowed, ever, it means they're not Kfiya. If they're not Kfiya, it shouldn't ever endanger the get. So what the Chazon Ish here is saying is a surprise, that when they're not justified, they do endanger the get. Ba'asher da'afilu mu'usha shelo kedin b'kadav nekasha. And it could be that even if it's mu'usha shelo kedin, in such a case, it is kasher. The chashiv onsa d'nafshe she'ein isui v'ones ella v'ein isui v'ones ella b'maisa v'lo b'shev v'altaisa afshin chayav b'tavoso v'chal onsa d'nafshe yesh b'recher matzivu mikol makom chashiv onsa d'nafshe. So this is a suffix. First he said maybe it's possible, and then he says maybe not. Very important line, because again this also reflects on how this whole thing works, that even if it's illegitimate, still will not be considered ones, because here's a key phrase. This is considered onsa d'nafshe. He is basically pressuring himself, because here, key phrase, ein isui v'ones ella b'maisa. If you want to be considered forcing somebody to do something, it's because you are taking an action against them. But if you are passive, even though with this passivity we're kind of missing out on obligations, right? Because we're obligated to help people in general, but still, that's considered to be his own fault, and we're not obligated to save him from these problems, and therefore, it's not considered forced upon him. So, two tzadim in the Chazon Ish, the first side, they both have different implications. Right? The second side, he's explaining why it would not be considered kfiya, so it's significant for that. And the first side, he's considering something that's a big fiddish, that maybe it is considered kfiya, and therefore, we have this kind of in-between zone where harchakos Rabbeinu Tam are legitimate even in non-kofik situations, but are still considered to be a form of kfiya, and therefore, if they're not justified, it's going to be mevatel again. So the hinei madas afkaloi lachazanish divrinu tam chazanish is safek. So this seems to be explicit in Rabbeinu Tam in the Sefer HaYashar. Sharchakos zuei kfiya klal. Seems like it's all been addressed pretty much explicitly, pretty much in most of the versions. And the language in the Sefer Yashar says that Ein Kfiyah Lav Shem Yitzchak Mekayim. And his kavani is that even after the Harthako, so it's still up to this person to keep his wife married to him. So therefore, what we're doing to him is not called kfiyah. So now the Mechaber quotes his father-in-law is pointing out that the Chassam Sofer, an introduction to the Sefer Yashar that was printed later, wrote that this printing of Sefer Yashar is Meshubash, is a little bit corrupted. The Gamastavir Shagirsas Maharit Mubuyakes, and it makes sense that the version of the Maharit is the most precise. Me'achshu Haya Harbei Doris Kodim, because it was published much earlier. So what's the version of the Maharit? What did he emphasize? He emphasized that the individual can go anywhere else.
What's the reason he assumes that it's more valid because it was printed earlier?
Yeah, that they were later versions of the Sefer Yashar that were printed, even though it was obviously written earlier, but the printing that was being quoted with that text was later.
Meaning so it was based on manuscripts that were after
it was
the
based
time.
On, but the way where they got to that day, so they're getting it from later, and then Maharik had established earlier that this is how we understood it in the time, so we'll give more weight to that. So, just to go a little bit further before we run out of time, so what can also be added here is that the Gersa of the Yemen Zeb says explicitly Ein Zeh Kfiyah, and went on to explain very clearly why he thinks that is, and clearly saying that. And also the Derech Moshe, they have that phrase also, Ki Ein Zeh Kfiyah Rak Shenos Motovos. So it seems very clear that the position of Bein Tam is understood by those Rishonim is that this is not called Kfiyah. However, in the third Girsa, which is a Ma'arik, so there it's more supportive of the Suffolk of the Chazon Ish, that the Harchaki is a form of Kfiyah, because the Maharik has the reason, Shem Yirtza Yimsa Makom Hulu Yilaka B'Gufo. If he wants, he can go somewhere else. And it's clear in his words that the whole reason the Harchaki is not Nechshav is the Maisik Kfiyah is because he can go somewhere else. And there they're not going to do it then. Umashma de kolhechash any ocha lucha is olechas, but makamacha nech sheves hachaka lukfiyah. So it sounds like if he taka can. So then it would be considered kfiyah. Sherei lo haisa nech sheves lukfiyah, lahi tzarech letam zesh, yocha lulech to makamacha, alhavu lamemar pshitus lukfiyah klal. Right, this whole chiddush of the Ma'arik, which is going to be very significant, as we're going to see if we're considering, for example, stopping this person from leaving the land of Israel. So the Ma'arik becomes very important. So it sounds like the only reason it's not kfiyah is because there's an escape clause. So then it sounds like it would theoretically be kfiyah. Although it's not really clear necessarily whether that really supports the Chazon Ish's suffix. Because still, it's true that the version here of the Maharik explains the lack of kfiyah differently. But it still should come out the same way that, practically speaking, it's not kfiyah. So therefore, even if this was done illegitimately, it still should not possibly get, because the get's not considered forced. So I'm not sure why that necessarily has to support the Chazon Ish. I think it gives a different reason why it's not kfiyah. Basically, it means that, yes, the harchakos are theoretically kfiyah, but what saves them is the fact that he can escape from them. So the only difference really is whether the harchakos could theoretically be kfiyah, or in other words, it's a very big practical difference, can you be considered kofet if you're simply withholding services and goods from somebody? So the Ma'arik would say yes, if it's absolute. So again, all of these possibilities that we posited yesterday, we basically see how pretty much all of them will reflect themselves lahalacha. So just to quickly sum up, and then we'll do a little bit of this tomorrow, and then hopefully focus more on the mamonos issues. But what have we seen? So having laid out all those possibilities yesterday, so we see them manifesting themselves in much of the different versions in the Rishonim. That we want to know whether or not the modern day policies of the state of Israel, whether or not they cross the threshold into kfiyah beyond harchakos. So we saw that on the one hand, Rishonim have different versions of what the harchakos of Bein HaTam are. First of all, in terms of what they're basing them on, that Rebbeinu Tam himself seems to base it even when it's Malas Alai, other Rishonim focus on when there's a Chiyuv, whether or not it would even apply if there's less than a Chiyuv, might hinge on the question of whether it is considered to be Kfiya at all. And we find that in terms of whether it's called Kfiya, so the Rishonim, for the most part, all seem to be saying that it's not Kfiya. The question is just why. So it sounds like from the original text of the Rebbeinu Tam that it's not Kfiya because he could still continue to do what he wants and just ignore what's going on. In other words, it doesn't rise to that level of unlivability. Sounds like from the Maharik, it's because he could escape. So therefore, it's also not being imposed on him in a definite sense. And it sounds like very explicitly from the Binyamin Zev and a few others that it's an active-passive distinction. But the interesting point, that it seems like the Maharik would not accept the active-passive distinction because it requires that there be this escape clause that he'd be able to get out of it. So one of the points that's going to emerge is that, just give a hint at the end here, one of the points that's going to emerge is that if you're doing all these harchakos together, then you might get into a bigger problem. If we were just to say he can't leave the land of Israel, that may not necessarily constitute fear, or it may depend why he needs to leave. If he has some pressing need to leave, which is not the time to go on vacation, it would be considered fear. But if he's in a position to choose to leave or not to leave for other factors in his life, so then stopping him from leaving would not necessarily be considered fear. But putting all of them together, that if you make all these other restrictions and don't let him leave, so that's going to be totally on the difference between the Maharik and the Binyamin Zev. According to Binyamin Zev, presumably it still won't be considered fear. We're still just holding back benefits from him. But according to the Maharik, if he's locked in the land and without all these benefits, would be a problem. And we'll also find, like also a suggestion we had yesterday, we'll see this a little more tomorrow, that there is going to be a difference between whether it's explicitly clear that this is all tied into he's not giving a get, basically making it outright clear, or is it less clear, just as life is miserable, but if he happens to decide to do the right thing, if life gets better, maybe that's a different situation. So God willing, we'll continue this tomorrow, and everyone should have a wonderful day. How are you doing?